Welcome, everybody, to the latest edition of the Hitman Chronicles. This is your host, the original great Rob Silver, and today we have another packed recap show. We will be talking about the incredible war that happened last Sunday in England between Fabio Wardley and Fraser Clark. Could be right now the leading contender for fight of the year. We'll talk all about it. We'll talk about another win by one of the best prospects in boxing today, another British fighter, Ben Whitaker. I love this guy. I think he's going to be a huge star. I'm hoping, fingers crossed. And he'll be 27 in exactly 2 months. So we're hoping the best for Ben Whitaker. He's got a lot of charisma. He's got a lot of flair, and he's got a lot of talent. I'm recording this on Saturday afternoon. I'm recording this part of the podcast Saturday afternoon. Tonight, we have two fights on the zone facing two of the best young fighters in boxing today in Richardson Hitchens and Diego Pacheco. We'll talk about that. That'll be the next segment you hear after I talk about the British fights last week. And then another jam-packed question and answer Ask Rob Silver session. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want your questions answered on this podcast, go to Twitter, tag in hashtag Ask Rob Silver, S-I-L-V-A, not S-I-L-V-E-R. I might have to check that out to see if anybody did that by accident. Anyway, hashtag Ask Rob Silver, just like my last name, just like the OG Rob Silver, Ask Rob Silver. And I'll answer it on the pod. I got a bunch of questions again I'm going to answer today on the podcast. And then we will end the podcast with my historical overview of the first fight between Nonito Donaire and Nioa Inoue. So let's get on to what happened last Sunday. Last Sunday was March 31st in the O2 Arena in London, England. Ladies and gentlemen, first and foremost, I love how boxing continues to flourish in the UK, whether it's Ireland, whether it's Scotland, and most definitely England, specifically Sheffield, London, Manchester. Those cities are always boxing hungry. I love it. I don't live over there. I've never been to England. But ladies and gentlemen, if I were to die tomorrow and I was to come back with the same type of life of being a boxing fan, I wouldn't mind, if not New York, to grow up in London, England, because I love the enthusiasm of the British boxing fans on social media. And every time I see a fight, whether it's Wembley Arena, whether it's Wembley Stadium, whether it's a soccer stadium in Manchester or Sheffield, whether it's the O2 Arena, and I used to call it the Oz Arena because I used to think the two was a Z, but no, the O2 Arena in London, England, I see packed arenas, packed stadiums of British boxing fans that have a fever for the sport, that have an enthusiasm for the sport. Ladies and gentlemen, in exactly 2 weeks, Devin Haney, who I consider the third best fighter in the world, defends his Alphabet Soup Criminal Cartel Super Lightweight Championship against one of the most popular boxers in America right now, Ryan Garcia. There's still over 10,000 tickets available. No one's buying this shit. The prices are expensive. Golden Boy and Haney Promotions overpriced the fight. You've got mid-level seats at over $1,000, almost $2,000 a ticket. Vegas prices in Brooklyn is bullshit. It's bullshit. And it's why that fight's going to take a financial bath. All right. They better hope that the pay-per-view numbers are massive to cover the losses that the gate is going to give the promotion and that fight, unfortunately. You would never see the equivalent of a Devin Haney, a fight between the equivalent of a Devin Haney and a Ryan Garcia in London, England. Guys on that level of popularity and talent do such putrid numbers in London. And New York City is the London of America. London is the New York City of England, period. All right. Enough of that talk. Let's get straight to the festivities of what happened this past Sunday. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have not seen these fights, especially Fabio Wardley versus Frazier Clark, and you live in the United States, Peacock has a monthly boxing show that is live from the UK, the Boxer Series, which has been airing on Sky Sports forever and a day. So the boxer shows also stream live on Peacock every month. It's a monthly card. And my understanding is that the Wardley-Clark fight drew 1.7 million viewers out in the UK on Sky Sports alone. I don't know about Peacock numbers, but ladies and gentlemen, if you have not seen this fight and you live in America, go to your Peacock app. Because I know most of the people listening are wrestling fans, and so they have the cock to watch WWE. Well, if you want to see what could be the fight of the year, go to that same app, click on the sports portion of the app, and go down to their boxing menu, and you will see this fight, Fabio Wardley versus Frazier Clark, March 31st. First, let's talk about Ben Whitaker. I know Ben Whitaker has been getting a lot of criticism in the from media pundits and boxing fans. Let the young man live, man. He'll be 27 in June. He got the silver medal at the last Olympic Games at light heavyweight. The young man is, in my opinion, a future star. Let him be. And what he did against Leon Willings, not on his level. He did whatever he wanted to do. He was playing around, and he easily won an 8-round decision. I love to see a fighter like a Ben Whitaker, where he's got a lot of charisma, he's got a lot of flair. He's got star written all over because not only does he have the flair and the charisma and the theatrics, he's got the ability to go with it. Eventually, he won't be doing that against elite fighters once he starts fighting elite fighters. No, he'll be more of a serious boxer. And then when that time comes, look out, because the sky's the limit for Ben Whitaker. Another victory, and he continues on his journey to hopefully one day become one of Great Britain's, the UK, all-time greats. We will see. We will see. And ladies and gentlemen, his career has been a little bit over 18 months, and he's already fought 7 times. I applaud him for that. I applaud Frazier Clark, because Frazier Clark, in a little bit over 2 years, 25 months, has now fought 9 times, I believe. 9 times. 9 times. So, I am loving the fact that these fighters out in the UK are staying much more active than their American brethren. It would only help to improve their, not only improve their game, but to build up on experience. Can't get better by just fighting in the gym. And you remain sharp by staying active. You don't remain sharp by long layoffs in between fights. Perfect example, Errol Spence. Perfect example, Gary Russell Jr. And I hope the same thing doesn't happen to his very talented brother, Gary Antoine Russell, who hasn't fought in a minute. All right, let's get to the main event of this British card, of this O2 Arena card between two well, I'm not going to say two young heavyweights because Frazier Clark is 32 years old. But these two up-and-coming British heavyweights, this was for the British heavyweight title, for the Commonwealth heavyweight title. And the British Commonwealth title has a long storied history. Some of the greatest fighters that ever lived from England, from Ireland, from Scotland have held the Commonwealth title. Well, tremendous fight. Fabio Wardley is listed at 6'5", but he looked to be much shorter than the 6'5.5" that Frazier Clark was listed at. Maybe it's because Fabio is much more, is built much thicker. He's built like a linebacker, while Frazier is built like a wide receiver slash cornerback. Also, Fabio crouches a lot. Frazier stands up straight. So maybe that's why I was thrown off by the heights, the height differential. We will see. Anyway, the first round, Frazier Clark dominated with that beautiful left jab. He's got a beautiful left jab. Round two, Fabio rocked Frazier Clark with a right cross, stagging him a couple of times, and I gave him round two. Round three, I gave also to Fabio Wardlow. Round four, Frazier Clark came back, and I thought he dominated with the jab and landed some tremendous right uppercuts and right crosses. Then round five. Round five was a tremendous round, going back and forth until late in the round, Wardley staggered and dropped Clark. Got to give that a 10-8 round. And so after five rounds, I had Wardley winning. In round six, they went back and forth. But once again, Wardley staggered Clark, and I had him winning the sixth round. So I had it 4-2 with one with the additional point for the knockdown. Round seven, and this right here was bad officiating in my opinion. Referee Steve Gray, in a round that I felt Frazier Clark was dominating with his left jab and nice counter right crosses, hit a shot that looked like to be on the belt line. If it was low, it was low by inches. Steve Gray stopped the fight, told Fabio to go to his corner, and I thought, okay, he's giving him time to recover. Then, inexplicably, he deducted a point from Frazier Clark for a low blow. And I'm like, what the fuck? I don't even remember the first five rounds, you guys can correct me, him ever warning Frazier for a low blow. This came out of nowhere, in my opinion. And throughout the remainder of the fight, he warned Wardley several times for throwing backhand punches. So at least 6-7 times he warned him. No points deducted. Had that round even because I had Clark winning the round, but with the point deduction, I had it even. It was 4-2, 1 round even. Then round eight and round nine, Frazier Clark stepped up, landing that beautiful jab and landing beautiful right crosses, right uppercuts, and carried rounds eight and nine. So I had it 4-1, but Wardlow up by 1 point, the deciding factor, that low blow deduction that was uncalled for. Round 10 was the best round of the fight. These two men went toe to toe, and several times Wardley, whose nose was broken and busted wide open, his right eye was closing and bleeding. Referee even had the doctor look at him and take a look at his eye and nose. And the doctor let it continue. And out of desperation, I think, Wardley went straight after Clark and staggered him a couple of times to take the 10th round. Rounds 11 and rounds 12, Wardley seemed to have used up all his stamina in the 10th round as Clark came on strong in rounds 11. In round 12, he staggered Wardley with a beautiful right cross. Wardley was up against the ropes, hurt, but Wardley held on and even landed a nice combination at the bell. Now, I gave rounds 11 and 12 to Clark. So I had, in terms of rounds, Clark up 6-5, 1-even. If that point hadn't been deducted, he would have had won 7 of the 12 rounds on my scorecard. My final scorecard was 113-113, a draw. The fight was a draw. And by the way, before I forget, when the fight ended, Frazier Clark was so, I don't know why I keep calling him Elijah. Frazier Clark was so exhausted that he went to sit down and he missed the stool and he sat on the bottom rope and he almost fell through the ropes. His cornerman caught him. Man, that would have been a disaster because he was completely spent and exhausted. He would have fell back first and the back of his neck, the back of his head would have hit the concrete on the floor. Thank God that his cornerman was there to catch him as he sat on the bottom rope and missed his stool. I had the fight 113-113. If it wasn't for the point deduction, Clark would have won the fight on my scorecard, and Clark would have won a split decision. There was a lot of rounds that could have gone either way, so I'm not, and in my opinion, the fight was scored correctly, so there was no robbery. We need an immediate rematch. This fight, right there, I rank it up there with the Carl Thompson versus Chris Eubank 2 wars. The Chris Eubank versus Nigel Benn 2 wars. Fights in the UK between UK fighters that were phenomenal. Michael Watson versus Nigel Benn. Some of the best all British fights. I put this on that same level. A tremendous war, and the type of fight in which both men came out looking better than before they went in the fight. I look forward to following both of these men's careers, and I'm hoping that both of these fighters fight each other next in an immediate rematch. That's how great this fight was. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you have not seen this fight, go to Peacock and seek it out. Now on to the Ask Rob Silver portion of the podcast. Let me type this in. Ask Rob Silver. Once again, if you want your questions answered on the podcast, hashtag Ask Rob Silver on Twitter. Okay, Colonel Gales, frequent contributor, asks, as young folks usually say, you've been around the block, so I want to ask you, do you have a favorite decade from your life experience? 80s, 90s, 2000, whatever. My man, Crimson Gales, look, Mr. Gales, you've been listening to all my shows since its inception, so you know I've shared my experiences living in New York in the 80s, going to college in New Orleans in the late 80s, living in New York in the 90s, so forth, until now, 2024. I'll be 56 years old in exactly 31 days. So 1 month from now, 1 month from tomorrow, 30 days from tomorrow, I'll turn 56. My favorite decade was the 90s because my beloved son, who passed away 2 years ago at the tender age of 29, was born in 1992. So he's the only child I had. So automatically the 90s are my favorite decade because I had so much fun with him, raising him. When he was two years old, I separated from his mother. We were living together and she became addicted to crack cocaine. So I took my son and first we lived with my parents. Then I moved him to Brooklyn. Him and I lived in Canarsie, Brooklyn for a year. Then we came back to New York and we've lived in first the South Bronx. We were back to the South Bronx in late 95. And then 19 years ago, we moved to Harlem. He moved to Florida when he turned 21 in 2013, came back in 2018, stayed with me for a few times, passed away a couple years ago due to his involvement with vices and the demons he had to deal with inside. But anyway, the 90s, Mr. Gales, is easily my favorite decade because of raising him as a baby boy until he was 7 years old when 2000 began. All right. Next question. Another question by Colonel Gales. I'm coming back to New York. You got to give me some places to hit up. Well, if you're talking about food, there's Ricardo's Steakhouse in Harlem on 110th Street and 2nd Avenue. There's Negril's on 8th Street in Greenwich Village. East 8th Street in Greenwich Village. 8th Street near 5th Avenue in Greenwich Village. There's several Footprints if you want to talk about Caribbean restaurants. Negril's is a Caribbean restaurant. And Footprints in Coney Island and Flatbush, Ralph Avenue and Coney Island, are definite spots to hit up as far as recommended restaurants, in my opinion, that you want to hit up. If you love seafood, City Island. This is the time of year to go to City Island. You go to City Island in the Bronx, it's several blocks of seafood. You got seafood restaurants. Sammy's is the most popular one. And then you've got a huge seafood takeout spot. Huge, takes up an entire two blocks. So those are spots as far as food goes. Now, as far as if you want to go see a Broadway play, go do your search. There's several plays you want to hit up. The Michael Jackson musical, so forth. There are a lot of plays. Alicia Keys has a new play on her Growing Up in Hell's Kitchen called Hell's Kitchen. So you want to check that out if you're coming to New York soon. Some of the spots. I always recommend a Broadway play. You want to, if you're a baseball fan, go see the Yankees at Yankee Stadium, or go see the Mets at Citi Field whenever you arrive. There's always plenty of tickets for both those teams available. All right. Malcolm asked about Roberto Duran versus Sugar Ray Leonard's second fight. I told him this on Twitter, so I'll repeat it on the show. I will answer that question in about 10 days when I do my historical overview of the rematch between Sugar Ray Leonard and Roberto Duran on the Life and Times of Sugar Ray Leonard series here on the Hitman Chronicles. Part 4 came out yesterday, Sugar Ray Leonard's virtuoso performance versus Wilfred Benitez to win the WBC Welterweight Championship, to win his first world title. Next week's show, Wednesday show, or Thursday, whenever it comes out, Wednesday or Thursday, part 5 of my Sugar Ray Leonard Life and Times historical podcast will take a look at his virtuoso performance against Davy Boy Green near Sugar Ray Leonard's Palmer Park, Maryland hometown. The fight was held in the Capitol Center, Landover, Maryland, and was broadcast live on ABC on a Monday night in prime time. All right. Next question. Jesus asks, in your opinion, who are the greatest Latin actors, actresses in cinema history? I know there are a lot, but if you want to make a top 5 male, a top 5 female, that's okay. All right. I'm going to answer half of this question. Today, I'm going to give you my top 5 female actresses that are Latin, of Latin descent, of all time, in my opinion. Okay. Number 5, let's go with Rosy Perez. I know a lot of people complain about accent, but Rosy Perez has had a phenomenal career. She got an Oscar nomination for the movie Fearless, co-starring alongside Jeff Bridges. Rosy Perez is my number 4. My number 4 is Lawrence Fishburne's ex-wife. She What is that beautiful Latina, a black Latina's name? Gina Torres. Gina Torres. I believe it's Gina Torres. Gina Torres is my number two, number four. My number four greatest female Latin actress of all time. Tremendous actress. Ex-wife of Lawrence Fishburne. They were phenomenal together on the series Hannibal. She really showed her acting chops on that show. Love Gina Torres. Afro-Cubana. Cuban. Both her parents are Cuban. And she's a Bronx native. So, you know, she's raised in the Bronx just like the original great Rob Silver. So, yes, Gina Torres. My number three is Zoe Saldana, the black Puerto Rican Dominican goddess. She's half Puerto Rican, half Dominican, of African descent. Zoe has been phenomenal. And Zoe is, if I'm not mistaken, the actress that's been in the most high-profile blockbusters. Whether it's the Avengers movies, whether it's the Avatar movies, she's been in one blockbuster after another. But forget the blockbuster sci-fi action movie she's been in. She's just a tremendous actress. I love it. I wish she would play a Latin more. She more predominantly plays a black character. She got a lot of flack for playing Nina Simone, and in my opinion, it was unwarranted. Fuck y'all. But she's a great actress. Recently, she was in the... what was the name of that series? I got to look this up because it's a must-see. It was a great series. Where is Zoe Saldana's filmography? Series. Let's go to the series. Special Ops Lioness, which is on Paramount Plus. Highly recommended. Starring Nicole Kidman, Morgan Freeman, and the phenomenal Zoe Saldana, who's the main star of this show. Nicole Kidman plays her boss and mentor. Phenomenal show. I would highly recommend it. It's on Paramount Plus. If you haven't seen Lioness, go check it out. Please. It's a must-see TV. It's must-see TV. Streaming on Paramount Plus. So we've got 5, 4, 3. Who are my top two? You know what? I'm gonna interchange this. Rosario Dawson is my number three. Zoe's my number two. Rosario Dawson, my number three. Rosario Dawson, first time I saw her was in He Got Game. Beautiful Boricua. Tremendous actress. And I loved her in the Luke Cage series, in the Marvel Netflix universe. She played the night nurse and Luke Cage's love interest in Luke Cage. And she's had so many starring roles. Just a plethora of great roles. Rosario Dawson is my number two. Now, who is my number one all-time female actress? I mentioned Rosie. I mentioned Zoe. I mentioned Gina. I mentioned Rosario. Who's my number one? You're number one in my book. Who's my number one? This is going to make a lot of people out there that are wrestling fans that listen to the show happy. But I'm going to go with Salma Hayek, right? Her role alone, phenomenal in the biopic Frida. Just phenomenal. Dusk Before Dawn? She's another one that's been in several great movies and given us great roles. Salma Hayek is my number one greatest female Latina actress of all time. Next week, Jesus, I'll give you my top five male Latin actors of all time. All right. see if there's any more questions here on the Ask Rob Silver portion of the podcast. All right, my last question I'll answer from AJ Hip Hop Kid. And his question is, what's your opinion on fighters getting interviewed right after they've been KO'd? I really hate it, by the way. Hey, I agree with you, AJ. If a fighter's been knocked the fuck out or has been beaten to a pulp, he should be out of the ring and onto a stretcher or a gurney and taken straight to the locker room where they prepare him to go into an ambulance straight to the hospital. All right? I don't want to see them interviewed after a fight. He's referring to Raleigh the Rapist Romero in the beating he took at the hands of Isaac Cruz. And after the fight, he clearly concussed, wished everybody happy Easter while his limited, because not only is he a creep in dealing with women in real life, Raleigh the Rapist Romero, he's an ignorant, uneducated clown. He's a fucking idiot with a third grade reading level. So he's up there. So with a combination of him being an idiot plus his brains being scrambled, he was up there going, I want to wish everybody a happy Easter. I'll be back. His training staff should have got him the hell out of there onto a stretcher or took him straight to the locker room where they got him dressed to go into an ambulance straight to the hospital. Because he took a horrific beating last week. And the first of many beatings he's going to take, as he's not that good. Colonel Gales, I see you got one more question. I'll save that question for next week. Jesus, I'll answer my five greatest Latin male actors of all time next week on the podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen, now on to the Ask Rob Silver portion of the podcast. And ladies and gentlemen, I just realized that I'm recording this and I forgot to stop it after I recorded the fights from Great Britain, because still tonight we have the Diego Pacheco and Richardson Hitchens fights. So that will be the final portion of this podcast. Richardson Hitchens versus and Richardson Hitchens and Diego Pacheco's fights tonight. Their fight. So that'll be the last segment you hear on this podcast, as right now I'm going to give you my historical overview of my 15th greatest fight in boxing history, according to the OG Rob Silver. This is the OG Rob Silver's greatest fights in boxing history. I'm about to read you an article that I wrote several years ago that no longer exists. I just have my original copies that I have on my hard drive and on my email. So my number 15th greatest fight in boxing history, November 7th, 2019, in Saitama, Japan, at the Saitama Super Arena, Naoya Monster Noni versus Nonito the Flash Donaire. This is what I wrote. The single greatest matchup in Asian boxing history. The greatest Japanese fighter of all time versus arguably the second greatest Filipino fighter of all time. A fight held in Japan for the World Boxing Super Series 118-pound bantamweight championship. The table was set for an incredible fight. And boy, did these two future Hall of Famers deliver. In a bantamweight version of Sugar Ray Leonard versus Thomas Hearns, both Naoya Inoue and Nonito Donaire put on an incredible display of power, speed, heart, skill, and intestinal fortitude. The 26-year-old Inoue was severely tested for the first time in his career. The 37-year-old Donaire showed why 8 years earlier people were comparing him to Roy Jones. Early in the second round, Inoue suffered a vicious cut around his right eye from a phenomenal Donaire left hook that impeded his eyesight the majority of the fight. We would find out later on that he also suffered a broken orbital bone in that eye. Donaire ate several of Monster's right crosses to land equally vicious rights of his own. In the fifth round, it knowing he had Donaire in major trouble and almost put him away before the bell saved the Filipino great. Virtually dead even after an epic ninth round that saw Donaire badly hurt Inoue, and a tenth round that saw both fighters land one bomb after another, it was the 11th round that clinched the fight for Inoue. Midway through the 11th, Inoue landed a left hook to the Flash's ribcage that sent the Filipino star running across the ring in pain. Barely getting up at the almost count of 10, Donaire withstood a barrage of bombs before hurting Inoue with his own left hook to the chin to survive the penultimate round of the greatest fight in bantamweight history. Inoue wisely outboxed Donaire in the 12th and final round to secure the victory and the World Boxing Super Series bantamweight crown. It was only fitting that the man who presented him with the trophy was the fighter he supplanted as the greatest Japanese boxer of all time, fighting Harada. Like Leonard Hearns won, it was a fight where both fighters came out as winners. Despite winning the fight, Inoue suffered a broken orbital bone and nose. Donaire, despite losing, cemented his legacy as one of the greatest fighters ever to come from both Asia and the Philippines. And of course, in the rematch, Inoue destroyed him in the second round, and Donaire fought one more time after that. Hopefully, he's retired. I know he's training fighters now. I don't think he ever officially announced his retirement, but God, please don't let him fight. And since then, Inoue became undisputed bantamweight champion when he destroyed Donaire in a rematch and is now the undisputed 122-pound champion. And in the Hitman Chronicles pound-for-pound listings, he's number one. In my opinion, Nonito Donaire is the greatest fighter alive, active, fighting in the sport today. And now on to the recap of the Richardson Hitchens and Diego Pacheco fights. Man, before we continue with the fight recaps, before we talk about the card that just occurred here Saturday night, I'm recording this right after midnight, Sunday morning, April 7th. There's one more question for the Ask Rob Silver portion of the podcast that I forgot to answer, and it's from my good friend Kobe out in Tennessee. Detroit born and living in Tennessee. Yes, and another great serviceman, military man. He served our country. He asked, Kobe asked, which actor had the best performance in One Night in Miami? In my opinion, that's a near-perfect film from a dialogue and acting perspective. Okay. I'm going to give it in my order of rank. You had four major characters in the movie. One Night in Miami, based around the night that Muhammad Ali, a.k.a. Cassius Clay, because he still hadn't changed his name to Muhammad Ali yet, Cassius Clay defeated Sonny Liston the night of February 25th, 1964, at the tender age of 22 to become the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world in a shocking upset. Well, according to my father, he didn't consider it a shocking upset because my father was the only guy probably in all of Spanish Harlem and Harlem that thought Ali was going to win, and he said so, and Ali did, and I talked all about that in my Greatest Upsets in Boxing History special that is here on the Hitman Chronicles archives. You can go do a search, look for Greatest Upsets. There's an episode in which I did several Greatest Upsets. That's one of them. Okay. Back to that night. So that night, Muhammad Ali celebrated with three of his closest friends, Malcolm X, played by Kingsley Benadire, Jim Brown, played by the always excellent Aldis Hodge, Sam Cooke, played by the phenomenal Leslie Odom. Cassius Clay, a.k.a. Muhammad Ali, was played by Eli Gorey. Now, of the four actors. And by the way, this movie, brilliantly directed by Regina King, her directorial debut, and you couldn't ask for a better directorial debut from an individual. Number four of the four actors, the fourth best award. And not to say that he wasn't good, he was very good, but when Denzel Washington and Nigel Thatch have mastered the role of Malcolm X, everybody else is going to pale in comparison. Kingsley Benadire did a very good job. You could even say a great to excellent job. But man, it's hard to match up Malcolm X when Nigel Thatch flawlessly, in my opinion, played him better than anybody else, both in Selma and in Godfather of Harlem. And of course, Denzel Washington got an Oscar nomination for playing Malcolm X in Malcolm X, Spike Lee's classic 1992 movie. Now, on to by the way, Kingsley Benadire, from what I heard, I haven't watched the movie yet, did a phenomenal job playing Bob Marley. Eventually, when I watch it, then I will critique it. Number three, and only because he had a small role. It wasn't as big as his other roles. The always great Aldis Hodge nailed Jim Brown. And if they ever did a Jim Brown biopic, he'd be the perfect guy to play Jim Brown, Aldis Hodge. He's my number three of the four. Number two, the Broadway star, the Broadway legend, and now a tremendous on-screen performer, Leslie Odom. You saw him in the Sopranos prequel movie, The Many Saints of Newark. He was the co-star of that movie. And with the great Patina Miller as his wife in the movie. And both Patina Miller, star of Raising Kanan, and Leslie Odom are Broadway legends. They have had one great starring role after another on Broadway. Leslie Odom, of course, Hamilton, the legendary musical. Leslie Odom captured the soul of Sam Cooke and had some of the greatest dialogues in the movie. You could make an argument for number one, because of all the actors, Sam Cooke probably had, Leslie Odom probably had the most lines as Sam Cooke in the movie. You can make an argument for number one, but the reason I gave Eli Gorey number one as Cassius Clay, a.k.a. Muhammad Ali, is because no one in the history of cinema, including Will Smith, has portrayed Muhammad Ali like Eli Gorey. He had the facial expressions of Ali down. He had the playfulness of Ali down. He had the boyhood charisma and charm of Muhammad Ali down. Eli Gorey, in my opinion, was the best actor, and it's a damn shame that since that movie came out a few years ago, I haven't seen him in anything since. I know he stays active. He's a Canadian actor, and he does a lot of Canadian vehicles, but that man captured Muhammad Ali, and if they ever want to revisit the story of Muhammad Ali, they need to hire that brother. I wish there was a series on one of these streaming services about the life and times of Muhammad Ali. Hell, use my 10-part podcast series as a backdrop to it, as research for it. Eli Gorey would be the perfect person. Ladies and gentlemen, ever since I saw Eli Gorey play Muhammad Ali in One Night in Miami, I haven't been able to take anybody else who's played Muhammad Ali seriously, because they're all characters. They're all goofs. The guy in Godfather of Harlem was horrible that played Ali. They never brought him back after a couple of times because he was hideous. He was dreadful. The guy that played Muhammad Ali in the George Foreman biopic, in which Chris Davis was phenomenal as George Foreman, he was a joke. I can't take him seriously. Also a caricature. Also a big goofball. Only guy, in my opinion, to capture the essence of Muhammad Ali in the history of cinema, other than Muhammad Ali himself and the greatest, because Ali played himself, is Eli Gorey. Better than Will Smith, better than Terrence Howard, better than these two goofballs in Godfather Harlem and Big George, the George Foreman biopic. All right. Thanks again, Kobe, for that great question. Now, couple of fights that happened before we talk about the fights from Vegas that just ended. Kudos to Gilberto Zurdo Ramirez. Shout out to my man, nice guy Eddie out there. He's the biggest Zurdo Ramirez fan that I know. Zurdo was impressive in out jabbing, out hustling, out fighting. Awesome Gulamarian to win Gulamarian's criminal cartel alphabet soup cruiserweight championship. And now Ramirez is at the perfect weight for him. He doesn't have to worry about making weight. He can make 200 easily. He doesn't have to starve himself before a weigh-in. And there's a lot of great matchups for him at cruiserweight. Now, stay away from heavyweight. He's not quick enough, and he doesn't have the punching power to be a heavyweight. I think cruiserweight is where he belongs and where he should stay, and there's some great matchups for him in Chris Billum-Smith, Lawrence Okolie, Ja Opetea. He could fight any of these guys, and it'll be a very competitive fight. Ramirez utilized his very good left jab, and he out-hustled, out-boxed, out-did everything to win his second world title. And definitely fought a great fight. Now, it's time for Jermell Herring to retire. A few days ago, he went to Australia, and he got beat by a nondescript opponent in Jackson John England. Jermell's a great guy. One of the best up-and-coming color commentators in the sport. He's the best color commentator on ESPN. Not saying a lot because Timothy Bradley's a big goofball and he's horrible. I think Jermell Herring needs to give up boxing. He should have never made the return after Jermaine Ortiz beat him. Jermell Herring has a beautiful wife, has a daughter that was recently hospitalized that he loves and is a great father. It's time for Jermell to retire. Please, if you're out there listening and you're a friend of Jermell, convince him. He's got a beautiful wife. He's got a beautiful family. And he's a great dude, and he can work easily in boxing as a color commentator. Heck, he's a very, very intelligent brother. He could be a trainer. Do something other than put the gloves back on and fight professionally. It's done. Stick a fork in Jermell. One of the best men in boxing, one of the pure gentlemen in boxing. He needs to leave the sport alone as far as a professional participant. Stick to commentating. Start training fighters. But please, don't ever fight again. It's a detriment to your family before the game, because you're at that stage where you're just going to be an opponent. No. Jermell, please, leave it alone. Okay. Now, let's get to the fights that just occurred in Las Vegas. Kudos to Diego Pacheco. Before I talk about Diego Pacheco's fight with Sean McCallman, I love Clarissa Shields. She's the greatest female boxer that ever lived. But DAZN had no business putting her amongst those other three goofballs. First and foremost, four men in a commentary booth. Whoever came up with that idea at DAZN should be fired. That's ridiculous. If you listen to my Life and Time series of Muhammad Ali, of Marvin Hagler, of Thomas Hearns, and now Sugar Ray Leonard, you know that I recreate the play-by-play for each fight. I'm one dude. And I cover a lot while announcing these fights as I recreate them for you guys as though I'm there that night. I'm one dude doing the commentary. You got four people in a booth. In this case, three men and a woman, right? Clarissa Shields has a beautiful accent. I love that Michigan accent, especially from black women. you know, she's very pleasing to listen to, but she had never seen Diego Pacheco fight before. You cannot put in a color commentator who's never seen the A side of the fight before. She had no clue on how he fought. She was like, he doesn't seem to be a good inside fighter. Pacheco's an excellent inside fighter. Clarissa Shields had never seen a fight. Now, people out there going to say, how could Clarissa Shields, the number one female boxer in the world, not have seen one of the best prospects in boxing today in Diego Pacheco? Clarissa Shields is very busy. She's training all the time. She's in the gym all the time. If she is watching fights, it's studying her future opponents, studying other female boxers. And also, she's a mixed martial artist. So she stays busy, and you forget that she was also working on her biopic that's supposed to come out this year. She's a consultant on that. So her hands are very busy. She's a very busy woman. She can't watch every fight. I'm sure she watches the major fights, but she doesn't have time to watch the Diego Pachecos of the world. That being said, you should not put a color commentator or someone. No, she's not even a color commentator. This is the first time I've ever heard her on the microphone analyzing a fight, color commentating on a fight. You should not put somebody in there that has never seen either participant fight. It's ridiculous. And the other three goofballs with the nonsense, they talk about Chris Mannix talking about, McCollum is doing great work to the body. He landed minimal amount of punches to the body in the fight. What the fuck was he watching? What was he looking at? I think the zone would be best if they're not going to hire a Jim Lampley and a Roy Jones to man their announcing team. I think the zone would save a lot of money and would save people's eardrums, and there'll be less headaches around the world if they just showed the fight on mute. If they just hired no announcers and just put the fight on mute. Because I'm tired of talking about these goofballs, and I'm going to leave it at that. As far as the Diego Pacheco versus Sean McCollum fight, McCollum was a tough, tough hombre tonight. He reminds me a lot of Montel Griffin in that he's very unorthodox. He gives you angles. Sometimes he's hard to hit. And I gave him two of the first three rounds because he was out-jabbing and out-hustling Pacheco. But beginning in round four, Pacheco adjusted, and I had him sweep the last seven rounds as he landed the cleaner punches. Inside, he began to bang the body. He landed nice uppercuts inside. He began to utilize his jab. He adjusted to McCollum ducking down by throwing his right cross downward and landing, and won on my scorecard 98-92. Now, he won by unanimous decision. Why in the world is Dave Moretti still being paid to judge fights, being paid to be a ringside judge? He had a 96-94 Pacheco. I don't see how you could have gave McCallman four rounds. Once again, Dave Moretti, he's a disgrace. He's old and senile. He's been refereeing since 1977. Ladies and gentlemen, he's been refereeing since 1977. I started watching boxing when I was 8 years old in 1977. I am 56 years old, right? Dave Moretti is an old, senile bastard who has no business judging again. And there's going to be a major fight coming up. He's going to be one of the three judges in Vegas. And he's going to give a horrible scorecard that could affect the outcome of the fight. He could be involved in another major robbery this year because the Las Vegas and the Nevada State Athletic Commission will not force this man to retire. Stop giving him fights! Kudos to Diego Pacheco. He fought a very difficult, unorthodox fighter tonight. He adjusted. It was a great learning experience for him as he continues his journey at 168 pounds. And once again, like I've mentioned before, he's leaps and bounds better than that bum Edgar Belanger. Now on to the main event of the evening. And what a way to end two consecutive weekends of great boxing. Ladies and gentlemen, I know a few weeks ago I did a podcast about the sorry state of boxing. I was pissed off about that clown shit show that's now an exhibition fight in a few months. Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul. The Anthony Joshua almost committed a murder against Francis Ngannou, who had no business being in a fight against a former Olympic gold medalist and two-time heavyweight champion of the world. But man, the momentum now is in the favor of boxing. Boxing is back as far as excitement goes, as far as matchups go. Last Saturday night's PBC pay-per-view card, even though it's going to not make any money. I mean, be honest. The pay-per-view buys are going to be measly. That being said, you had a tremendous card with tremendous action. Julio Cesar Martinez versus Cordoba. Tim Zhu versus Sebastian Fendora. Isaac Cruz's beating of Raleigh the Rapist Romero. And then last Sunday in Great Britain at the O2 Arena in London, the first fight we talked about today and the fighters of the week, not the fighter of the week, the Hitman Chronicles fighters of the week are Fabio Wardley and Frazier Clark in that great 12-round heavyweight war that is my leading contender now for fight of the year. And we cap off this weekend, Diego Pacheco with a tough but much-needed 10-round test against Sean McCallum. And now, tonight's main event, a tremendous fight, a clash of two styles that meshed perfectly, Richardson Hitchens against Gustavo Lemos in a 12-round action-packed fight. Lemos won the first three cards of my scorecard as he attacked Hitchens, banged the body, landed right cross after right cross. Hitchens was moving, but he couldn't keep Lemos off of him. And Gustavo Lemos reminds me of the great Argentinians of the past. He's got that Argentinian style, down pack, short, stocky fighter with a tremendous chin, great body punching, and brawling. Like an Oscar Bonavena, like a Victor Galendez, like a Marcos Madonna, like a Carlos Baldomir, that Argentinian style boxer that gives you hell. And he gave Hitchens hell. But Hitchens began to stay in the pocket and land combination after combination. And I gave him the next three rounds to even it out after six. After 10 rounds, I had it dead even, as there was a lot of ebbs and flows. And Hitchens seemed to have been tired by the body. In the 10th round, Hitchens just came on strong to take the 10th round because I had Lemos up after 9 rounds, but Hitchens came on strong in the 10th. The 11th and 12th rounds were two rounds that were very difficult to score. Both men did great work, and I gave Hitchens the slight edge in both rounds, 11 and rounds 12, but those two rounds, you could have gone the other way and given it to the other fighter. That's how difficult those rounds were. And at the end of the day, I had Hitchens winning 115-113, 7-5, but I could have made a case, and you could have made a case, for Lemos winning those last two rounds, and Lemos winning the fight, or even a draw. It's time for Las Vegas to start getting rid of some of these judges. Tim Cheatham had Hitchens winning 9 rounds, 117-111. That's ridiculous. Tim Cheatham needs to go just like Dave Moretti. Kudos to the other judges. They had it scored the same way I had it, 115-113. Hitchens wins by unanimous decision, but Lemos could have easily won this fight. It was a tremendous fight, a clash of two styles that meshed perfectly. Hitchens is now the mandatory for Subriel Matias's IBF Criminal Cartel Alphabet Soup title. That would be a very exciting fight to see. Hopefully, Matias wins his upcoming fight in Puerto Rico, and then him versus Hitchens will be an incredible fight because, once again, it will be a clash of two styles that mesh perfectly. Kudos to Eddie Hearn for putting in putting Richardson Hitchens and Diego Pacheco in tonight with guys that would test them. And Hitchens came close to losing that title shot. Gustavo Lemos, keep your head up. I know you thought you won the fight, and you could have easily won this fight. It could have gone either way. Gustavo should be given the first opportunity at the winner of Matias versus Hitchens. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a tremendous 2 weeks of boxing, and we've got a lot of great boxing coming up in the next couple of months. So boxing is on the upswing after a pathetic first 3 months of the year. April has gotten off to the end of March, early April, has gotten off to a tremendous start, and it can only get better. Next week's card, I don't think will be better. We've got on ESPN, and this will be next week's recap show, will be centered around the heavyweight doubleheader, Jared Anderson and Efe Ajagba, in fights that they should mop up their opposition. Bob Arum, let's stop with the baby steps with Jared Anderson. I need to see Jared Anderson fight Efe Ajagba next. Let's stop the BS. You've put Jared Anderson in with too many Uber drivers. It's time for Jared Anderson to face a heavyweight contender. And hopefully next week is a showcase for both Jared Anderson and Efe Ajagba to fight each other after they win their fights next week on ESPN. We'll talk all about that. Of course, we'll do another Ask Rob Silver Q&A session, and I will do another historical overview, either my continuation of my greatest fights in boxing history series, or, God forbid, if one of our legends from the culture passes away in the next week, we will see. Ladies and gentlemen, in a few days will be my part 5 of my Life and Times of Sugar Ray Leonard series here on Hitman Chronicles. That's the next time you hear from me. And then next Saturday / Sunday morning, we will have the fight recap, Jared Anderson and Efe Ajagba's heavyweight fights on the doubleheader on ESPN. Until we talk again in a few days, Sugar Ray Leonard versus Davey Boy Green, I want everybody out there to always be blessed and be a blessing.